بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. حكيم الترمذي رحمة الله عليه was a person of extraordinary beauty and attraction. On his way to the masjid, a woman would throw roses, flowers, etc. to try and catch his attention. And he would totally ignore all this. To an extent that he was in an orchard and the woman entered the orchard and she locked up the gate, trapped him in. But the fire of iman was so strong in him that he jumped over a 7-foot wall, jumped off actually. Later on, when he was advanced in age, a thought came to his mind that this woman was mad over you and you had totally avoided her. You had ignored her totally and you may have broken her feelings. You may have broken her heart, and breaking of a heart is such a serious thing. You could have done this, satisfied her for that moment and asked Allah Ta'ala's forgiveness. You wouldn't have broken her heart and you would have corrected yourself with Allah Ta'ala as well. As these thoughts began to ran into his mind, he came to his senses. What am I thinking about? When we are in this world, then we'll have all type of stray thoughts running in the mind. Remember, those stray thoughts that run through the mind are not a gauge and not a barometer to show you that you are gone down or you are getting elevated in any way. Many a times people make assessments wrongly, incorrectly, and when they have good thoughts running through their mind, they feel that they are being spiritually uplifted, motivated, and the iman is strengthening. And when they don't have that type of motivation and they're going low, they feel that the iman is going low. So this is not a gauge to see that your iman is going low or high. In fact, the person that continues working and striving in this normal space, even under these circumstances, then his reward is doubled. وَالَّذِي يَقْرَأُ الْقُرْآنَ وَيَتَطَعْتَأُ فِيهِ لَهُ أَجْرًا. So one that recites the Qur'an and he goes through difficulty in reciting the Qur'an Sharif, then his reward is multiplied. One is for reciting the Qur'an and one is for going through difficulty. In the same manner, a person who is going through some type of a spiritual low and he continues working at the pace that he was, he continues working, he doesn't fall down on account of this type of low feelings, he doesn't go down. So his reward is also multiplied, that in spite of that low feeling, he is still continuing. And when it's a low feeling, then he has to force himself. He has to endure difficulty to make himself work, though he's feeling low spiritually, but he's continuing. So really his reward is being doubled. And apart from that, it is a trial of love. Allah Ta'ala wishes to see, that are you working for me, are you striving for me, or are you striving for those feelings? If you are striving for me and you are working for me, then the feeling is immaterial. It came, alhamdulillah, very good. It was a cherry on the top. But if it didn't come, it's still a palatable cake, you can still eat it. It doesn't mean that you need to have the cherry to see to it that this cake is complete. It's got everything else, it doesn't have the strawberry, whatever else, but it's still edible, you can still enjoy it, you can still serve it to someone. So the same way, if you don't have that additional feeling, it doesn't mean that you are backwards in any way. In fact, it is a trial of love that if you don't have that feeling but you're still working yourself, Allah Ta'ala looks at you with sympathy and with mercy. This person, he doesn't have those feelings and he's still working. This person is blessed with the feeling and he's working. This person doesn't have that feeling, yet he's working for me. Yet he's striving so hard. So Allah Ta'ala looks at you even more favorably than the first person. I was explaining one person. The stray thoughts is like a person who's running in a marathon. Running in the marathon, the winning post, for example, is in Durban. And right through the race, someone is shouting at you, "You madman, you stupid, you mad, you stupid." Right through every step of the race, he's passing this type of comments: "You mad, you stupid, you're good for nothing, you're a waste." Right? So he ignores those whispers, he ignores those comments and those type of abusive statements, and he continues. Now, those comments that person made, did it hamper or did it cause any type of obstruction in the race? There was no obstruction. Why was there no obstruction? Because he remained focused on his path and he continued. So you understand that this type of negative whispers, this type of comments, this type of abuse will not retrogress you. It will not take you backwards. It will only take you backwards if you pay attention to it. A person is passing that type of statements and comments, and you want to answer him, you want to get into a fight with him, you want to argue with him. Now, you will be losing your cause. You will be losing your cause, you will be moving backwards. So the simple thing is let him pass his comments, let him say whatever he needs to say, and you do your work. He is doing his work, you do your work. His work was to insult, his work was to abuse, his work was to run you down, and your work is to continue the race. So you continue the race. So that brilliant person will be that person that will be focused to the track, he will be focused to the cause, and he's continuous, he's running, running. So many a times these type of stray thoughts, they run through your mind, and then they cause a great type of confusion, great type of trauma in your mind. Am I right, not right? Am I doing the right thing, not the right thing? Sometimes shaitan will bring these type of thoughts through urine, and urine drops, sometimes through air, that you release some air. So sometimes from the front, sometimes from the back, shaitan gets you from every corner. Min bayni aydihim wa min khalfihim, from the front and from the back. So he can't see you moving. He can't see you moving. He wants to distract you in some way or the other. So why must you get lost? Let him carry on. That is his work. He had taken an oath that he will distract you. So he has to do that work because he's taken an oath. And you have taken an oath that you're going to continue the race. So you continue with the race. Why must you get distracted? Why must you get worried about him? If shaitan was to give you Jannat and Jahannam, You should have been worried about him. But when he is not responsible to give you out the Jahannam or the Jannat, when he's not responsible, it's not his duty, then just ignore him, finish, continue. You continue with your work. In fact, you will irritate him even more if you're not going to pay any attention to him. But if he's provoking you and you getting provoked, then he'll get even more stronger. Because you can see now, hey, he's provoking and you getting provoked. So he'll get even more stronger. He's provoking you, not concerned about him. You just focus to the cause. So he will get tired, he'll get frustrated, and he'll leave you. So just frustrate him. And the way you're going to frustrate him is not to entertain him, not to answer those things. See, what he wants is he wants to engage you. One person was telling me, and now he's getting all these stupid thoughts, right? And then I asked him first to just ignore the thought. So he says to me, after 2 weeks or 3 weeks, you know, I ignored all these thoughts. So now it's coming with more force, greater force. And the thought that's coming now, why don't be a man and face the challenge, you know. Be a man and face the challenge. These are the thoughts that are coming now. Shaitan is putting that type of whispers. So I told him, by the grace of Allah Ta'ala, that if you were in seclusion with a naked woman, right, and she's trying to entice you, and you are avoiding her, you're moving away. And she tells you, be a man, face me. See? Why do you say, no, I prefer to be a woman and run away from you? Won't you say that? You'll say, it's not, I don't want to accept that challenge. She's a naked woman, now she's dressed for the kill. And you are in total seclusion. So what's the right thing? The right thing is to run away, to escape, to act as a coward. So you'll be coward in that situation, and in the sight of Allah Ta'ala, you will be the winner. But now you want to take it head on, then it's like you taking on the naked woman. She's going to be more and more forward, and you're going to resist, you're going to resist, you're going to resist. And at some point, you're going to slip. So rather you say, no, I'm a coward, and I'm avoiding you. Because I'm a coward, I'm avoiding you, I'm leaving you. So don't even answer, and just you continue your work. You continue, don't even answer him, don't entertain, don't do anything. Just continue your work. So we're talking about this Hakim Tirmizi, Rahmatullah Alayh. So in his advanced age now, this thought is coming to him, it's storming his mind. You know, you should have only given, you should have just relented, given to this woman, then you could have restored your relationship with Allah Ta'ala, and everything would have been sorted out. This woman, now you left her with a broken heart. Just then, Allah Ta'ala's guidance came up to him and said, hey, but how can I ever think like this? How can I think so backwards? At that time when I was young, then I had the power, I had the strength to scale a 7-foot wall. Now in my advanced age, as I'm approaching death, all these stupid thoughts are running through my mind. He made tawbah, istighfar, and he's crying one way, reading Durood Sharif. He snapped away in that state. So he sees Hazrat Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam, and Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam is telling him, that why are you worried, Hakim Tirmizi? Your martaba and your maqam is no less. Your maqam and your martaba, your position is still the same. At the time that you were young and now, your maqam and your position hasn't altered. You are still accepted, you still have got that acceptance, that proximity in the court of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. You haven't retrogressed in any way. You haven't gone backwards in any way. So why should you be feeling so low and so depressed within yourself? And the reason for this change of thinking is that, you see, when you were younger, you were closer to my zamana, my era. Nabi Sam is telling him, you were closer to my era. So the light of Nubuwat was stronger then. Now 50 years later, so the light of Nubuwat is gone a little bit dim. You are so far away in time. You were so close. So when you were close, you were seeing it more clearly, more vividly, more strongly. Now you have gone far in time. So when you gone far in time, now you're not seeing it as clearly as you were seeing it then. So therefore you have this type of feelings now more than what you had it in that period, in my zamana, in my era. Okay. So as we'll move in time, right, then this type of unclarity, this type of unclarity, you know, where things are not so clear, that will become even more. It will become even more. Doubts, unclarity, uncertainty. You will have this even more than what you experienced in the past. In the past, as you were small, everything was clear and clear and clear, and you were just moving. And now, as you're moving forward in time, now things are becoming more and more doubtful, unclear. Today there was an email. One youngster is writing up that he had a discussion with his father. So his father is saying that, why are you stopping me from watching television? Father is telling the son. The son says, no, it's not permissible. So the father is explaining the son, alright, you know, you're saying that it's not permissible, then I've studied some type of law as well, Islamic law. And the law in the prohibition is not absolutely clear. And then, as a support, as a proof, he says, see, pork, right? The law of the prohibition is not absolutely clear. That in certain circumstances, to eat the pork is permissible. So hence, the conclusion that he has arrived to is that the law is not absolutely clear. So now I have to explain to him according to his reasoning, you see. Now his reasoning, I can say your reasoning is flawed, finish, end of the story. But now to bring him to his reasoning and make him understand, see the flaw in your reasoning. the permissibility of talk is in a state of desperation, absolute desperation, it's life-threatening situation, then that becomes permissible. You can consume until you have freed yourself from danger, right? And then the analogy or the comparison for this is, you see a paramedic, right? A paramedic can exceed the speed limit. It can go past the robot, right? And it won't get charged, right? Now, a normal motorist cannot say that the law is not absolutely clear. You know, when the law has made a provision for a paramedic, so that means the law is not clear-cut. It's not absolutely clear. So, therefore, I will challenge this in court, you know, in court, when I'm made to appear in court, I will tell them that the law is not absolutely clear. What's your reason to say that the law is not absolutely clear, that a paramedic is allowed to cross the robot when it says red? So what will the law say? The law says that paramedic is a different issue. It's an exception to the rule. You are not an exception to the rule. That's what the law will say. And they will penalize you. Only penalize you. So now to bring this type of reasoning, whereas your reasoning is not right, not that there is no reasoning in the Sharia. In the Sharia law, there is reasoning. But the man's reasoning is flawed. And the flawed reasoning, he wants to challenge the Sharia. He can't challenge man-made law. Man-made law, he can't challenge that. He wants to challenge Allah Ta'ala's law. How can that be possible? So what I'm getting at is, as we are approaching Qiyamah, and as we're coming closer and closer, then that ambiguity will grow even more. Like I explained, a simple thing, the man can't reason. It's not, I studied Islamic law at the university, and what I was shown there, that all laws are not clear-cut. And then, to cite a proof, he cited the case, the example of pork. So his reasoning is flawed, but he can't see the flaw in his reasoning until I quoted an example from his lifestyle. That here, this is acceptable. If you go and challenge it in court, no, the law is not clear-cut, therefore I shot the robot. Will they now waive the fine? Will they waive the fine? They won't waive the fine. Say, no. It was that paramedic is an exception to the law, but khalas. You are not an exception to the law. So Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam explained to this Hakim Tirmizi, that you see, that zamana, it was closer to my time. So the path was very, very much more clear. Now you're moving forward in time. When you're moving forward in time, then you'll be more distant from my period. As you are distancing yourself from my period, the ambiguity will increase. It'll keep growing and growing and growing. Now, one is we need to understand what is the reason for the ambiguity. What is the reason? And the second thing is to know and to try and understand what is the cure. Right? There are multiple reasons for the ambiguity. There's a lot of reasons. Right? One simple reason is we are not in contact with our seniors, our mashayikh. Because they may be instructing us, right? And when they're instructing us, then we need to have the total affinity and the total conviction in them. See, a man works according to his convictions. You got three investments, right? And this is going to give you a return of 1 million, this 3 million, and this 5 million, right? And the one that is standing at 5 million, you're absolutely certain about. And the 3 million, 4 million one, or 10 million one, you're not too sure about. But the one that is 5 million, you're absolutely certain, right? So you're going to put all your wealth, your effort, your struggle into that. All your mehnat is gone. Now that mehnat and that effort is gone into that 5 million. Why? Because of your conviction. If you weren't convinced, will you put your investment into that? No. So your efforts is in proportion to your conviction. If you know that this business is going to give you this type of a return, then you will make that type of an effort. Right? That's simple. In any stretch of imagination, your effort will be in proportion to the profit. In relation to the profit, this is the type of effort you're going to give. You know that I will do this. This is the return I'm going to get. So you'll put 12 hours, 15 hours. It's all right. It's worth the 15 hours because at the end I'm going to get 5 million. A month I'm going to get 5 million. So I can see a lot of potential in this. I want to put the effort into it. Right? So really, when we look and analyze our lives, then one important problem is that we don't have the level of conviction that is required. And why we don't have the level of conviction? One of the reasons is that we don't have that affinity and that bond with our seniors. The ones that are taking us on the path, we don't have that level of conviction. So they are telling us something, but we don't have that level of conviction. Though we will not say that we are bereft of iman. Yes, we are mu'min. We are believers, but do we have that level? Do we have that level of iman? Where the sahabi is in some problem, and straight away he just goes to namaz, and he knows that things will just work out for him. Aisha is she comes across a beggar, and the beggar is asking for something. He says, "You got something in the house?" "Yes, bread." "Take all the bread and give it to him." And she's got nothing for iftar, but she's got that level of conviction and certainty that Allah Ta'ala will provide. So she's got that conviction, though there's nothing visible in the house, but she's got that conviction that I will give, and I will get tenfold I will get. So in proportion to your conviction will be your behavior, will be your conduct, will be your deed. Your deed will be in proportion to your conviction. So the bottom line is that conviction and that certainty, that yaqeen has to be uplifted. And one of the ways that you will get that yaqeen uplifted is to bond with your seniors. To have that conviction in them. And that conviction will come when you bond with them, you sit with them, you relate with them, you correspond with them, right? But you don't have that type of relationship with them, then you don't have that type of conviction. When you don't have that type of conviction, then your deeds don't have that type of strength. It's obvious. You don't have that relationship, so you don't have that type of conviction. When you don't have that conviction, then your deed doesn't have that type of power, it doesn't have that type of energy. But you have that relationship now, things becoming clearer and clearer and clearer. Everything is like daylight. It's so clear. When you got that conviction, then that amal and that deed also is going up. There's a lift. There's an elevation on the deed as well. Right? If you look at the past, the Buzugara deen, the mashayikh of the past, then there was a very strong rapport, a very strong affinity with the elders. Very, very strong. They didn't break it up. They didn't bring any type of weakness in this affinity and this bond. They would remain, they would correspond, they would be with them every chance and every occasion, until they didn't bring that yaqeen and that level of that to that requirement, then they continued. That they considered that to be the primary object in their lives. Everything else was by the way, business, etc., must come, but it will come in its time. But the first thing that I need to get sorted out is this conviction. Everything else will come in its time. Father Shaykh al-Hadith's father, Al-Mu'a Yahya Sahib, rahmatullahi alayhi. Father Shaykh wrote a letter to his father that, you know what, I want to spend some time with Mu'a Raipuri Sahib, rahmatullahi alayhi. So I want your permission. So Shaykh's father replied to him. Now he was aged. The Shaykh also, he was aged, was grown. His father replies to him that, you see, you need a formal permission for everything that you do until your relationship with Allah Ta'ala is absolutely not stable. See, until you're not absolutely stable, then you need to keep on connecting and keep on relating to your elder. Because your relationship with Allah Ta'ala is not absolutely stable, absolutely firm. When your relationship with Allah Ta'ala is not absolutely firm, what's going to happen? Someone can dangle a carrot, you can move in that direction. Someone will show you something else and you can move on a different direction. Your goals will always be changing. Goalposts will be always changing from one to the other to the third. You're always moving. Towards the end of the Masnavi Sharif, there is an incident. Masnavi Sharif really is prepared by two people. One was Maulana Rum, and the last part of it was Mufti Ilahi Bakhsh. he prepared the last. So towards the ending, there's a story there. One person followed a girl, you see. So the girl noticed that this man is following me. Said, "Bhai, what's wrong? I'm infatuated with you. I just want you. I'm mad in your love." So she walked a few steps and then she turns around towards him and tells him, "You know, just move backwards and my sister is coming behind me and she is much more beautiful than myself." So he actually turned and he went in that direction. She gave him one tight slap. And she says to him, "You see, and if you say that you were infatuated and mad in my love, then you would have never turned. But the fact that you turn, that means you are not stable, you're not strong in your love for me. If your love for me was absolutely stable and strong, you would have turned your face. But the fact that you have turned your face shows that you're not stable, you're not strong, you're not a reliable person." So exactly the same, when you become totally strong, stable, firm and established in the love of Allah Ta'ala, then you do other things, then it's not a problem. But you're not absolutely strong and stable and firm and established, you will keep moving and hopping from one to the other, to the third, to the fourth. Anything that will catch your attraction, you will go for it. Today was some material thing, you're running here. Tomorrow was some deen thing, you're moving there. Again, you'll find something haram, you're moving on that direction. So everything and anything is catching your attention. Because you are not established, you are not strong in the love of Allah Ta'ala. So these mutaqaddimin, these people of the past, this is what they looked at, and this is what they saw. That once you are firm in your love with Allah Ta'ala, your connection is absolutely strong, then you are an unshakable thing. Then, nobody can reverse you. It's like a mango or a fruit that has ripened fully, right? When it's ripened, you can't reverse it. You can't make it green again. So that's indicative of the person being fully connected to Allah Ta'ala, that he's ripened. I mean, it's fully ripened, it can't be reversed. Not that it is beyond the qudrat of Allah Ta'ala, but you don't see it happening. You don't see a person becoming mature and then becoming immature. It doesn't happen. He's immature, then he becomes mature. But that maturity doesn't reverse. Like a mango, it's ripened, you don't see it becoming green again. It goes one way, it doesn't return. So the same, when you are deeply connected with Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, then this whole connection cannot be reversed. Then you can't become disconnected. Can't. As I say, but the qudrat of Allah ta'ala, nothing is beyond Allah Pak's qudrat. But adatan, the way the world and the system of the world runs, you don't find something becoming ripened and then becoming green again. It goes and it goes one way. So the first thing that we have, the weakness that we have, is we don't relate to our elders. And because of that, now every now and then there's a hiccup, there's a problem, there's a hiccup. So this was the thing that was in them. They were very, very deeply rooted in their love, in their affinity, in their bond with Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. They were very, very deeply rooted. So Shaykh's father wrote up to him, says, "You see, you need to have this relationship with me until you are firmly bonded and established in Allah Ta'ala's love. Once you are firmly bonded, now Allah Pak has blessed you with this, that you are firmly entrenched, you are established. Now for you to reverse is like practically impossible. Now you can go. I tied you up, I binded you. Why I binded you? I didn't allow you to move, I didn't give you the freedom because of this reason. But now that you are strong, you are entrenched, now I give you the freedom." Like a child that is in school, right? So the father ties him up to the system. You can't move. Say, "No, today I want to go to university." "No, can't go. Today I want to go for an excursion on my own. 2-3 satis want to go, not go to school." "No, you can't do it. Today I want to go to the mall, do our own experiments in the mall." "You can't do it." So the father ties him up to the system. You must be tied up. Then at the level of matric, now he's very well entrenched. He knows what education is. And he's in university and he's moving well. Steady, he's moving. He knows what he's there for. He's not for the frills and the thrills of the university. He's there for the education. Now the father says, "No, I give you the free rope. Because you know what you are there for. You know your purpose out there." But if that student is not, he doesn't know what he's there for. He thinks at the beginning in the school, "No, school is a party." Then he thinks, "No, it's sports." Then it's for the national events, you know, to race and to go for the marathon, etc. So the father says he still doesn't know what is the whole aim of the school. Until you don't know and you're not firmly grounded in that, then I can't give you that freehold. So this is why we need to connect with our elders. Now you know it, and you entrenched, you established, you bonded. Now it's nothing that can shake you. You can't be shaken. You're so strong that you can't be shaken. We are talking really what is the subject today is the subject of fitna. What? Fitna. And fitna, one meaning of fitna is where things are not too clear. They are ambiguous. They are not too clear. The path is not clear. So how are you going to move when the path is not clear? The thicker the fog, the more difficult the path. It's thick, thick. See, you know, 1 meter in front of you, can't see 1 meter. So you can't move. You do not know you're going down a ditch or you're going to another motor car. What's happening to you, you don't know. You come to a halt, you come to a stop. So the fitna is becoming more and more dense. Now, under the circumstance, what do we do? A Quraishi delegation had come to the Jews in Medina Munawwara. They express themselves to the Jews, you see, we are an illiterate class. You people, you Jews, you are literate, you are people of the book, you are educated. We are not educated people. Ummatun, ummiyatun, we are illiterate class, you are an educated class. So because you are an educated class, we have come to you for some guidance and some counsel. What we want to know is this man that called himself a Nabi of Allah Ta'ala, is he truly appointed Nabi from Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala? That's what we came to ask and find out. So the Jews replied to them, saying that you ask them these three questions, you ask him these three questions. If he replies to all, gives you satisfactory answers to all three, then he's not a Nabi, he's an imposter. And if he says that he doesn't know the answers for all three, then too he's an imposter. And if he answers one and he doesn't answer two, then also consider him as an imposter. But if he answers two and he doesn't know the answer for the last one, then you consider him as the Nabi of Allah Ta'ala. What are the three questions? One is about the people of the cave. One is about Sikandar Zulqarnain. And one is about the ruh, the human soul. Right? So you ask him about all these three things. If he answers two and he can't answer the third one, then you would consider him to be one that is divinely appointed. So Rasulullah SAW answered them, and two, he gave detailed answers, the Quranic verses were revealed, the whole Surah Kahf was revealed, 110 verses. And the question on Ruh, Rasulullah SAW didn't answer that. So they made out that this was truly the Nabi of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. But really for many people, just finding out and investigating is not a solution for many people. Now look at this delegation, and look at the Jew that they consulted. Both of them did not accept Iman. They found out that he was the Nabi because he gave the answers, but neither did a Jew accept Iman, nor did this delegation accept Iman. So it was just a research, just an investigation. They went out and they found out. So this finding out like this really doesn't come with its results. People, you know, must investigate, etc. It will come with results. We do not say that you mustn't investigate. You investigate, but you have a deep down commitment that I get this right, I will go in that way. I find the answers, I will go that way. But if it is just to satisfy some type of curiosity, see, you don't have any conviction in that. It's just a curiosity. You want to find out when and found out thereafter. So anyway, this whole surah was revealed. 70,000 malaika had come with the revelation of the surah. Therefore, because the surah is speaking about things of fitna, right? Hence, a person reciting the surah on a Friday for 8 days thereafter, he will be safe from all type of fitnas. And if he recites the beginning verses of the surah and the last verses of the surah, then too for that day he will be safe from all fitna. Just the beginning verses or the last verses of the surah, then he will be safe from all type of fitnas. Ambiguity, the path is not clear for me, I will be totally safe from that. provided you do recite the beginning or the last verses of the surah. Allah Ta'ala blesses you with a nur from your feet right till the heavens. He grants you a nur, and you can see in that light of that nur. What is nur? Nur is actually, one is a nur that we say light, you know, light. So that is something that is physical, something that is external. And one is the illuminating of the mind, illuminating of the heart. Like you say, you know, 2 + 2 = 4, right? You say it so clearly with such conviction that you don't need any other external proof after that. You don't need any other proof. You don't need any proof. So you got so much of light in the matter that you don't need any additional light to convince you that 2 + 2 = 4. So this is what is meant by nur. Allah Ta'ala grants you that type of inner nur that you don't require any additional proof. You are so convinced, like the man is convinced about 2 + 2 = 4. So you've got an internal light. That internal light is convincing you that this is it. It can't be any other way. You are absolutely certain about it. So this is the level of nur Allah Ta'ala grants as a mu'min. As a result, the path becomes absolutely clear to him. He doesn't need any type of additional light. Many a times we want to know, what is this nur? We're looking for it now in our namaz, making zikr. The nur came or didn't come. So that nur is, what it refers to is this type of nur, where you get absolute clarity. There's no doubt at all. There's no ambiguity whatsoever. But this comes, as I said earlier on, when we have that type of affinity and that type of bond with our seniors. The same pattern was followed by the Sahaba Kiram, and thereafter by every other generation, they followed and they kept the company of the seniors, the elders. Allah Ta'ala granted them that level of nur. أَفَمَنْ شَرَحَ اللَّهُ صَدْرَهُ لِلْإِسْلَامِ فَهُوَ عَلَى نُورٍ مِّنْ رَبِّهِ فَهُوَ عَلَى نُورٍ مِّنْ رَبِّهِ. That nur, Allah Pak had allowed that nur to sit and settle into their hearts. So, فَهُوَ عَلَى نُورٍ مِّنْ رَبِّهِ. He sees it very clearly. The path is absolutely, abundantly clear for him. Now then, when we distant ourselves and you don't keep that type of affinity, that type of bond, then that becomes more and more ambiguous. More and more doubts begin to storm our minds. Is it right, not right? Something is not right. Now we don't realize that the doubt and that problem and that ambiguity is from within us. But because we can't see where it's coming from, therefore we consider that darkness to be the darkness of that person rather than the darkness within ourselves. We can't see where it's coming from, so we feel now that darkness and that obstruction is from that person and not from me. So you're looking now for a way to remove that nur, to remove that blockage. The right way is to have that type of affinity, to have that type of bond. Right? It's a simple procedure, it's a right procedure and simple procedure. But our Buzuganadin say that in this day and time, people's minds are so much loaded with doubts and suspicion that it is not even appropriate for them, for most people, not all, for most people to stay for extended periods with the Buzuganadin. Now, that zaman they were living 10 years, 20 years. Now, they say, no. Our minds are so loaded with doubts and suspicions, if you're going to live so long a period, small thing will happen, and all your yaqeen, all the confidence you had, all will be broken down. Because day to day something is happening, every day something is happening, and because of the daily events, your level of yaqeen will be broken down. You were looking at him from a distance, hey, what a big buzrug he is, right? But now you came closer and you were living for a long extended period of time, all your yaqeen and all your conviction is all shattered down. So for people like us, they say you stay for a short period and move. Come again for a short period and move. Come again and move. So you will remain like this, you will stay like this. Your conviction will keep growing until you build up that type of bond and relationship. Now if you stay for the extended period, you won't have that problem. See, the mutaqaddimin, the past, people of the past, they used to put people into these type of test and trial to see that this person, is he fit to stay in the company for that extended period. They won't just allow him to stay. They won't just allow him to stay until they make sure that this person is fit to stay in the company for that period. Otherwise, it's a wasted effort. You don't have that level of conviction and you're staying. So you're staying there, you see something, some discrepancy. According to you, it's a discrepancy. So your yaqeen and your faith that you have, that will be lost, will be broken down. So physically, outwardly, you are staying here, but are you progressing in any way? You're not progressing because your yaqeen, your confidence is not there. When your i'tiqad and your confidence is not there, so you are just going through the motions without progressing in any way. So why they asked you to do this is so that you build up that affinity. Now between you and your elder, there is absolutely no ambiguity, no obstruction. Now you just see all that colors, all that good in him is just passing on. That goodness that is in him is just passing on to you. Because there's no ambiguity now. There's no doubt about him now. There's no uncertainty about him. But as long as there was uncertainty, ambiguity, it's not passing on, it's not moving. You want it to pass. And you want to receive, but it's not coming through because of this feeling. As Ajay Rahmatullah explained, this was the effort, this was the struggle, this was the style at that time. One person, in fact two people, travelled from India to Balkh. Balkh is in Afghanistan, right? In the olden days, they're talking of about 5-7 centuries away, they travelled from India right to Balkh. Imagine how difficult a journey it may have been, where there was no trains, no planes, no motor cars. So they had to go on horseback from India right to Balkh, maybe over 1,000 kilometers, but they had to travel. How expensive it must have been, how long it took them, all the difficulties that they had endured. They come here to Balkh, and they're sitting at the house and they're making wuzu. Both of them are making wuzu. The sheikh is overlooking and they are discussing with each other. Okay, you know, the house and the pond that's in our place where we make wuzu is far more bigger than the house here. But that was the discussion. They made the wuzu, read the namaz. So the sheikh overheard and sheikh asked, what was the discussion? So this was the discussion. So she said, alright, go back to India and go and measure your hose and come back. Just one single thing, and he asked them to go back. In today's time, hey, this thing is like peer worship. 1,000 kilometers people came, mehman from such a long distance. You know, what difficulties, what money they spend. He doesn't appreciate anything. 1,000 kilometers person spent. He traveled. And measure that thing and come back. Measured. It was about one hand span bigger. They rejoicing, mashallah, we just saved our life now. And it's one hand span bigger. So they came in and they explained to the sheikh very confidently, you know, our pond is bigger. How much more bigger? One hand span. Sheikh says, you know what, in urf, you know, in usage, when you talk of usage, when it's just one hand span, then you don't say it's far bigger. You people said it's far bigger, it's not far bigger. Usage is one thing, you know, we accept usage. Or it is explaining to someone that usage is a law in the Sharia as well. In our day-to-day lives, we use this law of usage, but we don't know how we use it. It's used in our day-to-day lives. Like for example, all the food and the groceries that are in the cabinets and home, all belong to you, right? The wife received some of her friends, her sisters or her friends, she received and she laid it out for them nicely, well, very well. Must have cost her 700-800 rands, right, from the groceries, whatever, cream and the groceries and cakes and whatever she prepared, must have cost her so much. She laid for the mehman. Now, will you say here that you fed them with haram? It was my food and you fed them. Would you say that? You don't say that she fed them with haram. That she fed them without my consent, without my ijazat. So the food is haram. Why? But really, did she take permission? She didn't take permission. She didn't formally ask your ijazat. You know, Hazrat, I got some mehman here and I need to feed them. So do you allow me to feed all his mehman? She didn't formally ask your permission. But yet you would not say that what she did was haram. Why don't you say that what she did was haram? Because of usage. The usage is that she's my wife, she's got the right to entertain mehman, whoever she wants, she can entertain them. Right? So she can use your wealth. Right? But by the same token, now she says, you know, it's my husband, and like he allowed me to use all his groceries, etc., without his permission, he's got a vault there with all his monies. It's about 5 million rand there, and she began to dish out 100,000 rand here, 1 million here. Now, is that acceptable? Is that acceptable? But what's the difference? She used your wealth here, and she used your wealth here. Here you say it's alright, and here you say it's not alright. Why? Because there was a practice, there was a usage, an acceptable practice. Right? That was condoned by you, though not verbally, but it was condoned. So you don't object to it. And here, she knows it, and you knows it, you know it, that she is not supposed to go beyond this limit. And she exceeded the limit, so you hold her responsible by why you stole. Don't you say now, you're a thief, you're a robber, you're a rogue, why did you do this? Now she's analyzing in her mind now, you know, I do this, then it's right. I do that, then it's haram. So there is a law, there is a system like usage. And the Sharia also, the Sharia also recognizes this. So this Buzurg tells these two people, you see what? In usage of the word big, if it's just one handspan, you don't say it's very big. You say it's big, slightly big. Right? You don't say it's very big. So I come to a conclusion that tumhare mizaj mein ihtiyat nahi. You're not very cautious in your approach of speaking and talking. You're not very cautious. So therefore I ask you, I give you instructions, you go back to India. Hazrat Hamza, you should relate this incident to us. And he would say to us, see, he put them through their tracks, you know. Went to India, came back, sent them back. 4,000, all in all, 4,000 kilometers they had covered. What money they have spent. So much of money they have spent. And just on one statement he failed them, disqualified them, sent them back. So, why did he put them through so much of difficulty? So, the Hadhrim explained that he didn't put them through difficulty. He taught them a lesson of life. He taught them lessons for life. That you must be very, very cautious about the use of your tongue. You don't just blurt out anything and everything. You must be very, very careful, very, very cautious, because 90% of the fights and the disputes are on account of the misuse of the tongue. Last week one person was complaining. I just want to show you the misuse of the tongue and what disaster it can cause. One woman is pregnant, right? So one of the relatives comes in and she sees that this girl is pregnant. Now, both of them are about the same age. So in a very sarcastic way she says, oh, you pregnant, you're not supposed to be falling pregnant, I was supposed to be falling pregnant. Now as it is, she didn't like the statement, very unsavory, not a good statement to make. At that time, a woman wants to be pampered, say, mashallah, Allah give you good children, may they be the comfort of your eyes, may the whole thing go, the whole procedure go very easy, may you find a good doctor, and may he direct you in the right way, may those children become, mashallah, nice and healthy and good looking. So all that type of du'as that woman wants to listen to. But what she says in a very sarcastic, in a very insulting way, that why are you pregnant? I suppose you feel fall pregnant. Right. Now, in about the 7th month or so, she miscarried. The child died. When the child died, now she was laid in bed, loss of blood, and she was low, etc. She had to regain and recuperate. Right. Now she's recuperating, not even 1 week past, the same relative comes again. Now she comes again, and she says, what are you sleeping in bed now? You're supposed to be in the kitchen. She's just gone through so much of trauma, so much of pain, and to tell such a woman that is recuperating, to tell her this type of statements, is it the right thing? You see now this one statement, one word we say here, out of place, but what trauma it causes. We don't realize the trauma. You say, no, it's just one word. One word I said here, what's wrong? It's not a train smash. But what a disaster it causes to people. They have to tell that woman, don't come back again here. Everything is over, then you come back. Because you don't know how to use yourself. See, with the hadith, when it says that you promised me the use of your tongue, I promise you Jannat. So it's not a small hadith. We think it's a small thing. It happens to your daughter, what happens? You think to yourself, you got a daughter, and she miscarried, and someone comes and passes this type of comments. See? It's not at all acceptable, not at all appreciated. See? So this Busulganadeen, when they tell you, take care of your tongue, really they ask you to take care of your tongue for very serious reasons. They are protecting you and guarding you from major mishaps in your life. Now you've got to be very, very cautious, very, very careful as to the use of your tongue, how you use it, where you use it, to what extent you use it. See? And even if you are right, then how do I go about speaking to this person? How do I mention things to that person? How do I go about speaking things? Do I just give it the free rein that it can move as it wants? Or do I guard it, control it, so that I avoid myself and others from accidents? See? So this misuse of the tongue, as we consider it as a small thing. That's why the hadith says, that many people will be thrown headlong into Jahannam on account of the misuse of the tongue. Illa, because of the hasadat al-sunatum, whatever the tongues have harvested. Your tongues, the wrongs, the abuse, the insult. So you're not taking that type of care and caution, and this is the result. Anyway, what we're talking of is the surah and the relation the surah has got to do with fitna. This entire surah, right, it commences with the people of the cave. The unique feature in the Quran Sharif is when the Quran Sharif discusses something, right, it doesn't speak about the geographical aspects. Right? It won't tell you now, alright, this incident took place in this year. And this was the king, that was his name. And this was the location. And this was the age of those youngsters. You know, it doesn't speak about these things. Because the Quran Sharif wants to appeal to your understanding and reasoning. And wants to take you on a certain path. Right? If it's going to give you all this additional information, what was the ages of these people, this was the era that this had taken place, and this was the name of the king, this was the location, this was the area it had taken place, then you will miss the whole goal just now. The goal post is something else. You will go for all these extras. Whereas the goal post, the Quran is taking you in a certain direction. I'll go for this. Leave these things here. This is by the way, and we want to take you on this path here. We want you to come to this goal. We'll speak about the extras, you'll lose the main thing. Like you find a lot of children going to school, and they feel the main thing in the school is to flirt with a girl. Why are you going to school? No, that one friend of mine's, and I can't miss her company. And someone, why are you going to school? No, I'm going to school because of the sports. One person was in some madrasa in India, you know. So he asked his friend, "By what kitabs are you going to do next year?" So he said, "Next year I'm going to do Mishkat." Now Mishkat is like the second highest kitab. The highest kitab is the 6 Sayyid kitabs, and before that is the Mishkat Sharif, the second highest kitab. So he says, "Hey, you are a stupid thing, man. You are a stupid thing, you know. You went to Mishkat like that. Me, I'm doing Hidayah. Hidayah is one level lower than Mishkat, you see. One level lower than Hadith is Mishkat, and one level lower than Mishkat is Hidayah." So he says, "No, I'm in Hidayah, and I stuck in Hidayah for the last 7 years. You see, I stuck here in Mishkat, in Hidayah for the last 7 years, and I kept on failing. So now I don't have to worry. All my food is provided, my boarding is provided, my eating, staying, everything, 7 years, everything is provided. I would have passed all the years, I would have been long out of the madrasa. I have to fight my own battle. Now I'm stuck up here in 7th year in the Hidayah year. So everything is provided. So you're a stupid. Now you're just going and just out. Next year you'll be out of the madrasa. You have to fend for yourself. You see, 7 years I'm stuck one place." So people's goals are different. People's goals are different. The Quran Sharif is setting you on a goal. It's got a target, but you go on this goal. So when you talk of an incident, there are different dimensions that you can look at an incident. One is the historical aspect. To just to satisfy your curiosity, historical, geographical, that type of curiosity you are satisfying. And one is to look for true objectives. So the Quran Sharif says, نَقُصُّ عَلَيْكَ نَبَأَهُمْ بِالْحَقِّ. When we relate this incident, and we relate it in truth. When we are in Jordan, so that guide is telling us, he took us to the Ashab al-Kahf, you know, and then he took us to Musa alayhi salam, where Musa alayhi salam had escaped from Fir'aun, and he had come under a tree, you know. Was that فَقَالَ إِنِّي لِمَا أَنزَلْتَ إِلَيْهِ مِنْ خَيْرٍ فَقِيرٍ. Was it? Huh? What's it? What's the ayat before that? Huh? No, before that. Or whatever it is, right? He came under the shade of a tree and he made this dua, right? So, when he made this dua, رَبِّ إِنِّي لِمَا أَنزَلْتَ إِلَيَّ مِنْ خَيْرٍ فَقِيرٍ. Allah Ta'ala gave him three things. He gave him a wife, he gave him a job, and he gave him a house. Right. So now, this guide is telling us that when he gets South African tourists, you know, he gets South African tourists, so the South African tourists, they ask him, where is the tree when Musa alayhi salam made dua, and he got a Jordanian woman, you know. He got a Jordanian, where's that tree? So I told him, what answer you gave to them? So no, I didn't have any answer. So I told him, you should have given them this answer. You should give them a simple answer. That, إِنِّي أُرِيدُ أَنْ أُنْكِحَكَ إِحْدَى ابْنَتَيَّ هَاتَيْنِ عَلَىٰ أَنْ تَأْجُرَنِي ثَمَانِيَ حِجَجٍ. That, I propose my daughter's hand in your marriage, provided you work for me for 10 years. 8 years or 10 years. So I just told them. So he says, hey, that's the best answer that I heard. See, so in everything that you're going into, people look at it from different dimensions. One person is looking from a right direction, dimension. Other got his own ulterior motives. So the Quran Sharif is taking you one dimension, one direction. Now you just follow that direction of Allah Ta'ala, leave everything else. All the frills and the thrills, leave it. That's why the Quran is saying, نَقُصُّ عَلَيْكَ نَبَأَهُمْ بِالْحَقِّ. In truth, precisely, we're taking you to the right goals. All these others, extras, just leave it. We're taking you to the right goals. So the incident is as follows, just briefly, that it was a festival, yearly festival that they used to have. And the whole town used to be collected at one point, where they would go and celebrate. In that celebration, they got some rituals, some sacrifices, and some idolatry, and some animals given to those idols, whatever, all that type of stupid things they had, and they were doing all that. One of this youth, they witnessed this. So he felt very, very uncomfortable. You know, when a person is righteous, then that evil seems very unsavory, very, very unsavory. Like, you know, a person who is health conscious, who is neat and clean, right? If there is vomit there, or there is number two there, he feels very nauseated. He don't want to be near there. So move away quickly. So when a person is righteous and is clean inside, then he feels even more disgusted in the presence of shirk and kufr. He can't stand it. He wants to move away, he wants to run away. He can't stand the sight. Like a person that is pious, is righteous, right? And he's deep into righteousness, and if he sees a scene like a beach, he wants to move away, especially in this season, he wants to move away. He doesn't want to be there. One is because of his religious commitment to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, and one is because of his nation. He doesn't feel comfortable. He feels nauseated. Hey, what's wrong? So dirty people here. What are they doing? He wants to move away. He doesn't want to see that side. So that righteousness and the virtue has gone so deep into him that he doesn't feel comfortable there. So this one youngster, he moved away. He said, I can't stand the sight here. And he went under a tree. The second person joined him, and the third, and the fourth, and the fifth, whatever. The hadith says, Al-arwahu junudum mujannada. Fama ta'arafa minha i'talafa. Wama tanakara minha ikhtalafa. The souls, we were all together in one plane. They were all together, right? Then in that plane of souls, It was such that some ta'arafa, one had some recognition with the other. So where there was a recognition with each other, when they came down to this earth, then there was some familiarity because they recognized each other there. So when they came down here, now there was a familiarity, there was a friendship, there was an understanding. But if there was no recognition there, when they came down here, now too they can't just get along. So you will see the result of it. Sometimes it happens. In fact, many a times, you know a person from childhood, from birth, you know the person, right? But now over 50 years, 40 years passed into your life, but you can't just get along with the person. He seems to be a stranger, you seem to be a stranger, both moving on different ends. And it may be another friend, you just knew him from yesterday, just for yesterday you know him, and now you're so thick, like as though you're saying, Hazar saal pehle mujhe tujhse pyar tha. I know you from 1,000 years. From 1,000 years, I don't know where this love is starting you from. You can't find the beginning of this love. So this is a reflection of the recognition that you had in the Alam Arwah. There you recognized each other. When you came down here, now you're recognizing his familiarity, there is bonding. He's saying something, you're accepting. You are saying something, he's accepting. So there is absolute familiarity, there is absolute recognition, there is bonding. So these people that came here like this, so they must have been a recognition in the Alam Arwah for them to come all at one and the same time. Now when they are here all at one and the same time, and they can't speak, but they're afraid, why is he here? Why is he here? Does he know what's my niyat? And do I know what is his niyat? I don't know what the niyat. If I'm going to express myself, I'll be reported. Maybe he's a spy. And they're going to report me to the king just now. We'll be beheaded just now. So, what do we do? So they're all silent. After some time passed, one person spoke out and says, هَاُولَٰي قَوْمُنَ اتَّخَذُوا مِن دُونِهِ آلِهَا. Our people, they're involved in idolatry. Why don't they get some type of evidence to prove their stance? And who's more wicked than the person that invents a lie against Allah Ta'ala? So now they all agreed now. They all agree in agreement and they all in the same thinking. All are conforming with that thought. That means they came for the same reason. You see now in the fitna, the first thing is you move away from that fitna infested area. You move away to a group that is like-minded, like thinking. Allah Ta'ala, tawfiq nasib.